Good morning. It's 12:06. It's 8:06. Sorry, I got my noon report routine. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta on this Tuesday, June 25th. It's primary election day in Utah. Traffic around the Wasatch Back is running smooth this morning. Slowdowns in the typical spots. Eastbound I-80 kind of heading towards Silver Creek and the US 40 interchange. And just also seeing some slowdowns on State Route 248 around Quinns Junction heading into Park City. Looking at the weather in the Wasatch Back today, we're currently at 55 degrees and partly sunny here in Park City, a little bit warmer, around 60 degrees. In the Heber Valley, it's going to heat up today. We're looking at a high of 89 in Park City, and Heber, it's looking at 96 degrees. We'll get back down to lows tonight around 60 degrees, and then tomorrow we're looking at highs around the same, and then a partial chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Well, coming up, we've got a full slate of guests this hour. Summit County Fire Warden Bryce Boyer will join the show to talk about fire restrictions ahead of campfire and fireworks season. Then Utah Open Lands Executive Director Wendy Fischel will discuss open space issues in Summit and Wasatch counties, including Bonanza Flat and the Lundeen property in Wasatch County. Then Utah Department of Transportation Region 2 Communications Manager Kyler Sharp will talk about the major construction projects in Summit County that will affect the daily commute into the fall. Then Alex Campbell with the Be Equal nonprofit has details on a benefit concert with American authors at the Utah Film Studio Saturday. Some local news now. Wasatch County Republicans will make their voices heard Tuesday in Utah's primary election. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the local Democratic candidates are already determined for the general election.
Republican candidates for two local races after April's convention, a county council seat and the county assessor role. For an at-large seat on the Wasatch County Council, former Midway Mayor Colleen Bonner and retired Marine and firefighter Nick Lopez advanced to the primary. Bob Adams and incumbent Todd Griffin are on the ballot for county assessor. Republican voters will also make their picks for U.S. Senate and House District 3. State races on the primary ballot included GOP choices for governor, incumbent Spencer Cox or Phil Lyman, Utah Attorney General, and state auditor. To vote by mail, ballots needed to be postmarked by Monday. Wasatch County Clerk Joey Granger said as of Monday morning, her office had received around 3,000 ballots. Tuesday, ballots can be dropped off at locations around the county until 8 p.m. See kpcw.org for details. Unaffiliated voters can also register with the GOP and vote in the primary at the County Administration Building Tuesday. Full details about the 2024 elections can be found on the Wasatch County website. KPCW will share preliminary results of Tuesday's primary when they become available. Results will also be posted on the Wasatch County Clerk's website and the State Lieutenant Governor's website. The primary election results will be made official in 2 weeks. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
I've got a surprise guest in here with me this morning. Shane Scott, Summit County Manager, is in studio to give a quick preview on tomorrow's county council meeting. How's it going, Shane?
Good morning.
How's it going?
Going great. How are you?
Good. So I assume county council meets tomorrow. Is that in Colville or Kimball?
Yeah, it's Colville tomorrow.
And so what's on the agenda?
Well, one thing that I think we're pretty excited about is last year we did an effort with Park City to evaluate a housing authority. And we asked the staff from both organizations to put that together. And over the next 6 months, up until the first of maybe January, that has kind of dwindled and fizzled. And we asked Jeff Jones from the county to look at what that might look like with just Summit County putting a housing authority together. So he's made a presentation of what we could do there and some of the actions we might take. And so that's maybe kind of an exciting development.
And that would be without Park City.
It would, but it would be open to Park City or any other city still joining up with us if we wanted to. Yeah. We also have John Angel, who's our Public Works Director, is coming and talking about the F.J. Gilmore parcel or subdivision. This is the land over there by Home Depot where Mountain Regional Water and High Valley Transit are both building. Mm-hmm. This is just an update on the subdivision. We've had some real site work challenges, as probably a lot of people have known, and just an update on where infrastructure is and what the next steps are. I think the council is just looking for an update on that. And then finally, we have a quarterly update from a little bit from me, but mostly from Jana Young, our deputy county manager, on the work plan for 2024. The council's looking for where are we on the seven priorities we set last year, and we've got a lot of good things to update the council on the general plan, on the work on the Klein Dolly parcel, some transportation projects that we're working on. Housing, short-term rentals, solid waste, and lands and natural resources. So we got a lot going on in the county, and this will be a good opportunity for the council to see where we are in their priorities and answer any questions.
And that just kind of sets the policy priorities for where the council wants to go?
That's correct. And like last September, we had a retreat where the council mm-hmm. set those seven priorities, and then this is an update from each of those departments or directors on what's going on in those priorities and where we are and where we're falling short. I mean, for example, to be honest with you, short-term rentals is a priority of the council, and we've really neglected really addressing that hard in the county, and we've had just from a lack of time and resources, we haven't been able to get to it as much as we can. We're trying to get back on the short-term rental process and what that looks like for us.
Yeah, I remember 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, the county looked at it was kind of through the licensing process, maybe regulating it through that. Do you think you would potentially go through that same route or somewhere?
I do. I mean, if we could get every short-term rental in the county with a business license, we'd at least know who's here, mm-hmm. who's coming. If there's a disaster, we could always try to contact the owner of the place, but we won't be able to contact the person in there if they're in a short-term rental situation if we don't have a business license for them. So it's those kinds of regulations, those kinds of enforcements we're looking at, and even as our clerk is instrumental in the business licensing, and she'll be really important in that process and how that shapes up.
Yeah, and do you feel unlicensed rentals are a particular problem? Do you believe there's a large amount of those?
I do. I just think people take it more seriously when they have mm-hmm. when they have a license through us, and they know that they have to participate, and we can also again communicate with them what are our regulations. If they have a jacuzzi, you know, are they getting it tested? Is it available for public use, or is it just something they have in their backyard where people are getting in there and maybe there's a health and safety concern? So there's a lot of those little issues that we're still trying to work through.
Yeah. Anything else on tomorrow's agenda, Shane?
I don't think so. A couple other minor items, but we're looking forward to the meeting tomorrow.
All right. Well, thanks for
Parker,
coming
thank
in.
Thank you.
On the phone with me now, I've got Bryce Boyer. He's the fire warden for Summit County. Bryce, can you hear me?
I can. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I guess to start, Bryce, Summit County, I believe it was just late last week, increased the fire danger in the county to moderate. Can you kind of explain what that means and why the county, you know, has to kind of take that step?
Sure. So the fire danger signs are just kind of to get the public's awareness up as we move from low or no fire danger. And as that starts to rise, multiple layers with it from low to very extreme. So you've got low, moderate, high, very high, and extreme. Right now, being in the moderate, things are starting to dry out. We're starting to see warmer temperatures. We hadn't been seeing a whole lot of rain and so on. Then we had the cold front come through, which knocked temperatures down, raised the humidity, and we actually got to see some precip. It has started to, you know, we're forecast to see some more precip this coming week. So that helps to keep most of the fuels with live fuel moisture, as we refer to it, so the growing vegetation still having moisture in it.
Yeah, and when you look ahead just at the next few months, when do you guys kind of forecast the wildfire danger to kind of hit its peak?
So that is done in conjunction with multiple agencies from mm-hmm. local, county, state, and the federal partners. That is done so that all of the, in one geographic area, all of the restrictions are at the same level.
Yeah.
To take away confusion with the public. There are seven criteria that are looked at. some of those being the fuels, the weather, the predicted weather, as well as fire occurrence. And with that, in Summit County, to date, we've only had 9 brush fire calls. One of those lightning, the others have been smokes and that kind of stuff. They've all been able to be picked up relatively small and quickly with initial attack.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask too, you spoke about how, just the local agency is very, you have a lot of coordination with state and federal partners. How is kind of the network of fire crews in the state really working together, you know, just prepared to handle, a large fire if that does occur?
So that is through the Interagency Fire Center. For this area, it's the Northern Utah Interagency Fire Center. Mm-hmm. And there are aircraft that have been moved in, both helicopters and fixed wing, that are in the area of fire crews. The state has added a helitech crew this year with a smaller helicopter, and still maintains the 2 larger helicopters for initial attack, and then with crews and so on throughout the West and Utah that are available to come in.
Yeah, and you know, it's just peak summer recreation season, a lot of people outside. What are kind of those day-to-day tips you have for residents or visitors just to make sure that they're keeping just everything fire safe?
So making sure that you do campfires in improved fire pits or in campgrounds in designated areas. If you are having campfires, making sure that they are put out cold to the touch before leaving them. A lot of times as we get into the summer months, folks will go out and have a recreational fire, not get it totally out. It's still hot. They leave, it dries out, and we get fire starting from those. So having people use good fire sense and making sure that their fires are completely doused and cold to the touch. With the 4th of July holiday coming, making sure that if they are doing fireworks, because we're not looking right now at the 4th having restrictions on them, based on fuel conditions, weather, predicted weather. We're, again, like I said earlier, we are looking at some precip towards the middle or end of this week. And longer term, it's looking like we could see some by midweek next week as well. But if they are lighting fireworks, having a bucket to put the expended fireworks in prior to throwing them away, soaking them overnight. When they're lighting them, making sure that their fireworks are secure, that they don't fall over, that they're not igniting fireworks around dry vegetation, particularly dried out, cured June grass or cheatgrass. Being respectful of neighbors' homes and so on, that you're not lighting them towards other structures.
Yeah, and Do you have any idea of when the county, I know this Park City does its own kind of ordinance, but just when you may look to institute those restrictions, and can you kind of remind people on what those usually entail?
Yeah. So there are multiple classes. There's a level 1 and a level 2. Level 1 fire restrictions takes away unimproved fire pits. We limit cutting, grinding, smoking in dry vegetation areas. Then a level 2 takes even recreational fires down to a gas only type, or barbecue grills and that kind of stuff, where it doesn't leave any charcoal residue. As far as looking when we may see that in Summit County, right now we're watching the forecast, we're watching fire occurrences, crew resources, and having those discussions on when we may need to look at going to that. as far as right now, I don't, as I said, we're not looking at fireworks restrictions for the 4th, but based on fuels and so on, I would not be surprised to see them by the 24th with drying trend and it getting hotter and drier for periods of time.
Yeah. Well, and anything else you want to mention, Bryce?
Just, again, that using fire sense, common sense, looking at the fuels in the area, not lighting fireworks or campfires and burning in areas where there's dry vegetation.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bryce, for calling in and keeping us updated.
Thank you.
Take care. Park City's two major ski resorts are challenging their county property tax bills at separate hearings this month. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports on that.
Summit County Assessor Stephanie Paul says both resort areas' property values went up last year following discussions around redeveloping their respective parking lots. Her office noticed the resorts had more allowable density than previously known. According to Paul, Summit County's portion of Deer Valley is valued at around $322 million, and Park City Mountain, including Canyons Village, is around $622 million. Her office contracted with an outside agency specializing in ski resort appraisal to generate the values. She declined to release either resort's requested valuations at this time. However, she said the resort's requested adjustments were, quote, significant. Both are challenging the assessed values of some land parcels, not the total valuation of their resorts. Both resorts also appealed their valuations through tax representatives. Paul says tax reps often approach large companies and offer to fight for lower taxes, then take a commission from the savings. For Summit County's tax purposes, Deer Valley has 61 land parcels. The resort is appealing 10. Park City Mountain comprises 171 parcels, according to the assessor's office. A tax rep appealed 151, but only 127 of those parcels are part of the larger 171. The other 24 are being handled separately. Deer Valley's hearing was June 20th, followed by Park City Mountain's June 27th. At the private hearings, third-party officers determine the resort's full market values and then will distribute that number across the parcels that were appealed, Paul says. The officers' decisions are always reviewed and accepted publicly through the Summit County Council. The hearing officers' decisions will be made public at a future council meeting yet to be scheduled. If either side doesn't see the result they want, they could elevate it to the state level. Deer Valley Resort declined to comment on its appeal, and Park City Mountain couldn't comment in time for this report. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Park City planners will reconsider details of billionaire Matthew Prince's proposed home on Treasure Hill tomorrow. Earlier this year, the Planning Commission approved Prince's 11,000-square-foot home plans. Then several neighbors appealed the decision, citing a violation of local development rules. A three-member city panel rejected the appeal but tasked the commission to review the Sensitive Land Overlay, or SLO, a zone that restricts development. The city's zoning map shows a portion of the Prince property is within the SLO. However, the lot is part of a special area along Treasure Hill called the Sweeney Master Plan Development, which historically hasn't been subject to the SLO. On Wednesday, the Planning Commission will be asked to determine whether the SLO applies or not. The property owned by Matthew and Tatiana Prince is on the upper portion of Treasure Hill and in some areas has slopes exceeding 40%. A lawyer for Eric and Susan Herman, Prince's next-door neighbors leading the appeal, said the SLO should apply and that the project doesn't comply with its requirements. A document submitted by the Herman's lawyer for Wednesday's meeting states construction of the home would require excavating over 11,000 cubic yards of earth, similar to the King's Crown development near Park City Mountain, which suffered a landslide in 2022 after record winter snowfall. Eric Herman said Park City needs to apply the SLO regulations as a matter of safety.
I believe the city has a duty to protect its citizens, and there is no way that the contemplated excavation can be sufficiently, the dangers of the contemplated excavation can be sufficiently mitigated that citizens' property and lives will not be at risk.
Bruce Baird, one of the attorneys representing Prince, said the Cloudflare CEO's land has vested rights that mean the SLO does not apply. He said the princes have just as much interest in making sure the site is safe.
The first victim of any landslide would be the princes. So they have every incentive to make sure that the mountain doesn't landslide, because it would be their house that gets hurt first.
Baird said they have geotechnical reports that support the project's safety, and they plan to monitor their contractor on site during construction. After the Hermans filed their first appeal of the prince's home, the billionaire filed two lawsuits in Third District Court against the couple. One centers around a driveway easement across the Hermans' lot and involves the couple's two Bernese mountain dogs. Prince said the Hermans violated off-leash laws on the trail connecting their property. The other lawsuit pertains to a rock wall protruding over the neighbor's property line. Matthew and Tatiana Prince purchased the park record in March 2023. Wednesday's Planning Commission meeting is scheduled to begin at 5:30 p.m. The agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found at kpcw.org. On the phone with me now, I've got Utah Open Lands Executive Director Wendy Fisher. Wendy, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Parker.
Good morning. How's it going?
It is going well.
Well, we had a couple properties we wanted to discuss. I guess we'll start in Park City. I know you were part of a recent discussion a few weeks ago about Bonanza Flat open space. I think to start, could you just kind of give our listeners some background on how this land was protected and just the management strategy behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bonanza Flat is one of those unique properties that, had it been developed, it really would have had quite an impact with respect to the infrastructure and traffic that really Park City would have had to deal with, even though the property is technically in Wasatch County. And that's because it had been part of an annexation agreement way back in the 90s. And it was slated to be developed into an 18-hole golf course, 260 units, and commercial development on that side. And so actually in 2017, after a successful open space bond, and when the landowners who'd been under contract with a developer, when that fell through, there was an opening for Utah Open Lands and Park City to negotiate a potential purchase. The result was that there was a gap of about $13 million that needed to be raised in order to finalize the purchase price beyond the open space bond that had been passed. And so Utah Open Lands, along with 11 nonprofits, three different counties, three different cities, two different agencies, we worked really hard to raise the $13 million gap. We were successful, and we were able to, alongside Park City, get that purchased. And then after that, we spent a number of months and actually years working on a natural lands inventory, the baseline documentation, which documented all of the current conditions. And from there, along with the conservation easement, we developed a management plan. And the management plan was really to look at how do we ensure these conservation values into the future, especially when there were a lot of social trails. There were a lot of issues with trails that had been created that were not sustainable, that had been used, quite frankly, by trespass, but by a lot of folks that were creating erosion and issues for water quality. And this is at the headwaters of what flows down into Deer Creek, which then eventually flows around to the Great Salt Lake through the Provo River. So we had a management plan that we worked through. We had jurisdictional and technical stakeholders that were part of a year-long process in evaluating the management plan. And then in 2020, that management plan was formally adopted by Park City. And so the discussion that we had most recently with the Park City Council was to go over where we're at with the management plan and what are some of the goals that have shifted or changed or remained the same from the perspective of the Park City Council. And that's what the discussion was about in looking at the management plan for Bonanza Flat. It's about, all told, 1,500 acres, really at the top of, we call it the heart of the Wasatch.
Yeah, and I did want to get a bit into those particular action items. Obviously, this would come at the whim of the council and their approval, but potentially looking at maybe adding some paid parking or reservations. Can you kind of just speak to why that may be necessary?
I think that what is really important to understand is, first and foremost, the design of the management plan was to track the trajectory of the conservation values and really evaluate if we're doing a good job protecting the resources. And those resources have to stay in balance. So yes, there's recreational opportunity. We've restored and revegetated a lot of social trails so that we have meaningful and purposeful trails that we've worked with our partner, Mountain Trails Foundation, and obviously Park City. So those are some of the nuances that we have to look at with respect to the management plan. So when it comes specifically to the parking issue, when we first acquired the conservation easement for Bonanza Flat and the resulting management plan, there's a cap within the conservation easement as to how many parking spaces can be there. And that was based on all sorts of trail counting and surveys and being on the property for quite a while to see how many people were coming there and to really meaningfully not increase the amount of people coming to the property so that we could really work to protect the resource. And so that's why we capped it at 175. There are not 175 parking spaces up there at this point. We're not feeling that there's a need to add additional parking. Mm-hmm. But what we're looking at is, I think one of the things that's come from the council is really when you look at this resource that is in large part paid for by taxpayers with respect to the open space bond, are local parkites having the ability to utilize this amazing resource? And that's where some of the discussion came in with respect to reservations or a paid parking system to enable a pass potentially for locals. So that's one of the things that really came forward from the council as a motivation that they had for having Utah Open Lands and the Park City Open Space and Trails team look at what would it mean to do paid parking. I think the other thing that we see from Utah Open Lands' perspective is that paid parking is something that a lot of land management agencies are looking at. And that's just simply due to the fact that the amount of recreational use and interest has really exploded since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. A lot of people got out into the outdoors. We saw a 300% increase in the amount of use of open spaces statewide. We know it's the thing that attracts businesses and visitors to our community, and those are good things from an economic perspective. But when it comes to the resource, I think one of the things that the Open Space and Trails Committee and Utah Open Lands are looking at is, as these other agencies on adjacent land properties where there are trails, as they start charging for parking, we don't want to then have be squoz, so to speak, and have everybody come to the trailheads on Bonanza, even if they're intending to go use trails on other properties. And that's another factor that's come into looking at whether or not there needs to be paid parking on Bonanza Flat.
Yeah, and part news to me in that discussion a few weeks ago were the all the trailheads in Big Cottonwood Canyon that the U.S. Forest Service is implementing new fees on. I know you mentioned that you all are looking to expand your transit to trail service that you've been offering here, but now down in Salt Lake, I guess you guys are looking to potentially take hikers into the Cottonwoods, or what exactly is that looking at?
So I think that what we're trying to do is to match what we've done with Park City and some private donors who have come forward and said, yes, you know, transit to trails is a great idea. One, it reduces congestion at the trailheads for sure. Two, obviously, if we're looking at reducing our overall carbon footprint, getting to these places and doing it in a manner like carpooling through these shuttles, that makes sense. And then the third thing is, actually, we found that a lot of people really enjoy the service. So it hits a lot of boxes. And that's what we're looking to expand on the Wasatch front. Utah Open Lands does have some preservation projects that we've done in Big Cottonwood Canyon, and we're working with those landowners because we hold the conservation easement on that side. But primarily what we looked at and the grant that we got from the Central Wasatch Commission was to expand transit to trails, allowing drop-offs at Bloods Lake and the Bonanza Flat Trailhead, again, reducing congestion, reducing not only at Bonanza, but also in the canyon itself. I think that on the Wasatch front, both Little and Big Cottonwood Canyons, really when you see how many people are using those canyons on a regular basis, the traffic is quite extraordinary. And so that's one of the things that we've looked at is, again, this would be specific to Bonanza Flat, but really targeting the cities and the communities where we see a lot of their residents utilizing the Bonanza Flat area.
Yeah, and one last question before moving away from Bonanza Flat. I kind of just see it thrown around online from time to time that swimming is allowed in Bloods Lake, which I thought was used by the Girl Scouts and that wasn't allowed, but can you just give some clarification on that?
So the Bloods Lake is actually the drinking water source for the Girl Scouts. So if everybody can just stop and think about that for a minute. It's the water source, the drinking water source for the Girl Scouts. Obviously, we want that to be a protected source. That is why dogs have to be on a leash around Bloods Lake, because obviously that creates a significant amount of nutrient load. I can say that we don't have a specific prohibition. That becomes something that's incredibly hard to enforce. But best practices, which is really what we're hoping people can start to think about. If you want to be a steward of these amazing open spaces, really think about the best practices. And you probably don't want somebody swimming in your drinking water.
Yeah, thanks for that info. And finally, I wanted to turn, I know you're scheduled to be in front of the Wasatch County Council on Wednesday. I believe this pertains to what is called the Lundeen property. Can you kind of just give our listeners some background on that and what you're looking to do?
Yeah, Utah Open Lands has been successful in garnering federal funding for numerous properties within what we typically call the North Fields. And to that end, Utah Open Lands is moving forward with a larger federal grant. It's a regional conservation protection program where we would be focusing on not just the North Fields, but properties that exhibit some of the values that are found on the North Fields, habitat values, heritage values, the agricultural sort of nuance of the area, and then also water quality issues. And so as we look to broaden that in applying for these funds, one of those is the Lundeen property. And the Lundeen property is one of those projects where it's not unlike the kinds of land conservation projects we end up doing in a lot of instances where families don't always agree with what they'd like to see happen on the property. Some would like to sell it for development. Some would like to retain it for the legacy, the heritage, the connection to their ancestors. And also they want to retain it as open space. You had that kind of disagreement within the Lundeen family. It actually rose to a legal level. They have now made it through the legal issues with respect to that, and we're moving forward with them for a conservation easement. So what we're doing in front of the Wasatch County Council on Wednesday is we're asking for them to commit funding. Some of it is the funding for the Lundeen parcel that they have agreed to. And now that the legal issues are done, they can formalize moving forward with that. And then additionally, some of that is for other properties that we would be looking to protect within the North Fields. There are three major projects that we've got that are about 250 acres total. We're looking at another approximately 200 acres within the North Fields. And then of course the Lundeen property is 119 acres. And so what we're hoping to do is maybe garner some more federal funding. But the great news is that there was able to be a resolution within the Lundeen family so that they can move forward with a conservation easement. We've been working on getting that moving forward. And, you know, we look forward to a positive vote by the council on Wednesday.
All right, Wendy, I am out of time. Is there anything else you want to mention?
Just that certainly if people want to come out on Wednesday to the Wasatch County Council and voice their support for the protection of the North Fields and this regional partnership program, and obviously the county support for the Lundeen property and these other properties, we would sure appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Parker.
We've been speaking with Utah Open Lands Executive Director Wendy Fisher. On the phone with me now, I've got Kyler Sharp. He is the Region 2 Communications Manager for the Utah Department of Transportation. How's it going, Kyler?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I know it is busy, busy season for UDOT right now, especially up in Subic County starting this week. Can you kind of give me the lowdown on what's going on? I know there's just a few impacts.
Yeah. So as you know, we're kind of right at the peak of construction season. Right now in Summit County, we did just kick off almost kind of like a fourfold project that really is in the areas around Interstate 80 at Kimball Junction, the westbound US 40 to westbound Interstate 80 flyover, the eastbound and westbound US 40 between SR 248 and I-80, and then the SR 248 interchange. So as you can see, it's a mouthful. It's a lot of projects, a lot of stuff happening kind of right now. So I can just kind of give you a little bit of detail about what each project is. So yeah, we'll kind of start at the Kimball Junction area, right? So this is this one, the Kimball Junction is at the eastbound off ramp, the kind of that outside lane. Our crews will be putting up some barriers right there, and they'll actually be doing work behind those barriers, so they'll use them as protection, but it's doing it on that eastbound off-ramp outside lane. They'll be doing some drainage work and some roadway reconstruction, which is just kind of our standard maintenance, which is pothole patching, just basically improving the driving surface in that outside lane. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what that project is, and that actually started on June 24th. Then we'll move over to the westbound US 40 flyover to westbound I-80. So this one is at the bottom of that ramp. It's that asphalt portion of it. So basically what our crews are doing there is really just, there's some major potholes right there, so they're trying to improve those and just kind of going in and seeing what some of the issues are. Right now you'll see them out there placing some barrier and stuff like that. So this will actually be a 21-day closure, and that will start, I believe, late July, maybe early August. Okay. I don't have a for sure date, but I can get that for you today, this afternoon. I think they're having a meeting on it. So that's kind of what that project is. It's just perform excavation and asphalt paving. So just your standard repair potholes, make the driving surface smoother. Then we'll go over to the third project, which is US 40, SR 248 to I-80 pavement rehabilitation. And this one really is, I believe it's placing, hold on here. I believe this one is placing pavement panels. So they'll be doing some pavement panel repair / replacements in this area. This will be daytime closures. They'll be using rapid set concrete to kind of accelerate the process, and you'll see impacts on eastbound and westbound, so both directions. And that one, again, is just kind of improving our concrete and just making everything a little bit more safe. And then the last one, I believe, is SR 248, mm-hmm. that interchange there. So this one is that exit that takes you off of US 40 to Park City, so kind of between Camas and Park City there. Basically, we'll be adding a lane to each exit ramp. So we'll have a dedicated right, we'll have a dedicated left, and then in the center there will be kind of a shared right and left turn lane there as well. So, and then I believe our crews will also be doing a microsurface in that area as well, along with possibly putting in new traffic signals and restriping to allow for better movement in the area. So that's kind of a quick rundown of all four of those projects that are happening. Right now we have the Kimball Junction one has started June 24th. and then the westbound US 40 flyover to westbound I-80 also started June 24th, but that one is just kind of getting all the pieces in position for that 21-day closure in late July. And then I believe the US 40 SR-248 to I-80 pavement rehab, that'll start early July, after the 4th, of course. And then the SR-248 interchange will start mid-July. So that's kind of what it's looking like. Daytime schedule, so that would be work from Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And that's just kind of a rough estimate there. And then looks like we'll be doing some nighttime work as well, which would be Sunday through Thursday nights from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah, and just looking at a rough kind of fall completion timeline for all these projects.
Yeah, so that they're haven't really said much on when completion will be. If I had to guess, it'll possibly, some of them may go into late September, mid-October. So you could see that. Looks like completion is late fall 2024 is what I'm looking at right here. So there's no really estimated date on when exactly the work will be completed, but I can definitely get that for you once I find out.
Yeah, and just anything else you want to let drivers know kind of headed in peak summer season?
Yeah, you know, we know there's been a lot of work happening up in Summit County for the last, gosh, it seems like 4 years now. We really appreciate the patience. There will be some impacts, so just bear with us. If you have any questions, we do have a project hotline. And then we also have our UDOT public input page. So if you ever wanted information, you can go there. And that's the project is called Summit County Projects. They're all kind of looped in together, and the hotline will be on that site as well. And then, of course, use the traffic app, right? We really rely on the traffic app to get out information in real time. So if you have any questions as far as what traffic delays are, you can always go to that and just see or get an idea of what's happening. So we really do appreciate the patience to one, all the stakeholders who live in Summit County, but also just anybody who's traveling up there. I know it can be painful at times, but just bear with us. And we really want to do a good job, and doing that right is making sure that we take the time to make sure that this work gets done.
Yeah, I use the app a lot. It's pretty good for real-time information.
Yep.
Anything else you want to mention, Kyler?
No, that's it. Just we really appreciate the patience from the from everyone up there in Summit County, and I really appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come on here and talk about some of UDOT's projects.
Yeah, thanks for the update. We've been speaking with Kyler Sharp. He's the communications manager for Region 2 in the UDOT Department of Transportation. Jumping back into some news, construction has started on a mixed-use development next to the Utah Film Studios that the Park City Council approved in 2022. KPCW's Christine Weller has an update on the new affordable housing.
Utah Film Studios owner Gary Crandall is heading the Studio Crossing development near State Route 248 and US 189. It will feature 208 affordable housing units, as well as 140,000 square feet of market-rate townhomes and condominiums, and 60,000 square feet of commercial buildings. Options range from studios to units with 1 to 3 bedrooms. Crandall said his team worked with the Park City Council to make the affordable units available to people who make 60% to 80% of the area median income. However, Crandall said instead of requiring people to move out if they start earning a higher wage, residents are permitted to bring in up to 120% of the area median income.
This way they're able to stay, get an extra job, and save some money up so that eventually they will be able to buy something and move into their own dwellings.
Crews broke ground on the mixed-use development in November 2023, and construction is now underway. Crandall said the ground leveling was completed last year, and the team is now trenching. Half of the 208 affordable housing units will be constructed to start. Crandall said his team is also looking into master leases, agreements giving another party control of the property and responsibility for managing it.
We've met with the police department, the fire department, the school district, the hospital, Peace House, and several other groups that have expressed some interest in possibly master leasing some of that for their people. If they take the 104 fairly soon, then we'll start the additional 104 immediately.
A bus stop and trail connections are planned in the near future. Crandall said the groundwork and foundations for most of the project will be finished by fall, and crews will continue construction through the winter. Residents are expected to start moving in by November 2025. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In studio with me now, I've got Alex Campbell. How's it going, Alex?
Good, Ben. How are you? Good morning.
Good. I understand you're with a new nonprofit called Be Equal. Can you kind of give me some background on what that's about?
Yeah, so Be Equal has been around for about 15 years, started by Devin and Chris in Salt Lake. Okay. And I partnered with them in 2019 to start donating some nonprofit stuff towards mental health in the community.
Yeah.
I started a wine club called Onyx. I have owned a concierge company for 19 years. And a lot of co-workers and fellow associates needed help with medical bills or paying for other stuff. So I kind of like looked into it a little bit more, a little bit deeper. And then I found out a lot of my local friends within the restaurant industry and other service industry didn't have any insurance. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the facility to pay for a lot of things. So I was trying to figure out how I can input some of my, what I do in the community and figure out why not start a new concert series and use that money to help pay for some of their mental health or medical bills, which is our target goal this year. So far, we have 7 recipients that have reached out to me in the last month that needs help with medical bills or paying for other stuff. So
yeah, and so I understand you're hosting a concert this Saturday, and that's to benefit two local industry employees. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so this Saturday at the Utah Film Studio on Kearns, I was fortunate enough to have very good clients that are very successful and helpful within the community, and they've reached out and connected me with a bunch of agency. American Author, the band, they're coming in on Friday. They're playing on Saturday, and we also have Max Frost coming in. And then I started in October again, then we'll have a full lineup of concert going through the winter. It's just a way of creating more entertainment within the community for a lot of my clients and associates. But then we can use that as a way of facilitating, helping the community however way we can.
Yeah, where can people find tickets? How much do they cost?
So tickets are gonna be on Eventbrite. Okay. And then we also have a URL called utahconcertseries.com. They can go online and they can find tickets there. Tickets for kids under age of 18 is like $50. Okay. And then we have a variety of different other tickets going up, but we also have donors and sponsors because we want to make this into a community event because there's a lot of influencers and companies that comes in and out of Park City. So we want to work with all the hotels and the bigger industry players in the community and see if they can have those clients partake in doing something fun within the community. They can all come in and they can know all these things with different resorts and hotels, but then they can come in with a corporate group and still buy a sponsored table and bring those groups in and interact with the community and learn more about Park City, I think.
Yeah, only have a few minutes left, running out of time, but you have more concerts planned?
Yes, we have about 6 or 7 that we're working on right now. I'm actually gonna do a community barbecue with a bunch of my clients on the 24th of July, which would be really cool. We're gonna do that over by the Jordanelle. Mm-hmm. I have the number one U2 cover band coming in to play. We're gonna have like a maybe about 200 people there. And then starting in November, going December, we're gonna try to get people like Michael Bublé, The Fray, and a couple others, Lady Antebellum, which is now Lady B, over the winter. And hopefully over Sundance Week, we're planning on doing some concerts as well. But those tickets will only be for local residents only, because a lot of people in Park City still can't have access to Sundance.
Yeah,
so we want to create like a fun entertainment group where we can still utilize having a concert for local people within Sundance and throughout the year and have them be a part of it, and the money still goes towards that.
Yeah, gotta go, but one last time, what's the website where people can go?
It's utahconcertseries.com, and if you go on Eventbrite, you can also find them there as well.
All right, anything else you wanna mention, Alex?
No, man, thank you guys for having me, and I love that you guys are a proud sponsor of it. I know that American Author Max Frost is very happy to be in Park City for the first time, and I'm hoping that we can do a lot more with this.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming in studio, right. Alex.
Thank you very much.
Thousands were without internet in Park City Sunday due to an Xfinity outage. Around 4 p.m. Sunday, Xfinity reported thousands of outages in Park City and along the Wasatch Front. A subsidiary of Comcast, the company said on its website, the company's network suffered sustained damage, but they did not offer any other details about the cause of the outages. According to Down Detector, an online platform that tracks services, Xfinity customers across the country reported internet problems as well.